My name is Father Christus, Chairperson of Scobody Lecturers with Dr. Davids. Over to you, members, for introductions, and then over to you.
Carol Deerwinkel, good afternoon.
Goedemiddag, het afternoon, Dennis Joseph.
Goedemiddag, Daniel Mitchell.
Moroni Mansour Maseko.
Moroni Sial de Kerikian.
Over to you for introduction.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the invite. My name is Norma French Mbombo. I'll hand it over to the HOD and to the department to introduce themselves. The reason I'm also saying that is because when the HOD is doing this, then it can continue without no further coming back to me until I take up questions. We are responding to the what the scope I have identified, where we'll be presenting the rollout of the electronic filing system, the user asset management plan, the mechanisms are in place to avoid salary overpayments. The HOD will indicate who's going to speak around that, and then we'll take further questions, because I don't want to do much introduction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. Is Engelbert here of the department?
Engelbert, Director of Financial Accounting.
Good afternoon, Infrastructure Planning.
Good afternoon, Laura Angelique Dutwe, Facility and Infrastructure Management.
Good afternoon, Daisy Shand, Information Management.
Good afternoon, Ian De Berger, Information Management.
Good afternoon, Nikki from the Bayside, People Management.
Afternoon, Benedict Aris, People Management.
Good afternoon, Daniel Simon Valentine, Health Ministry.
Thank you very much for that. We're going to do it section by section. So after the first one, we will have questions, and after the UAMP, we will have questions, and then after the last one, we will have questions. I always say in the previous meeting that we had also, you know, Skopje, it's a long time back. But unfortunately, we have resolutions that we must see. Did you implement that? And I know it was Member Beerwinkel that had, I don't know if you remember, I just checked the records, Member Beerwinkel that had a question about the manual filing system because of your facilities that's decentralized. There was a big problem with that. So we're going to do that one first, and then I'm going to allow members to ask questions, and then before we go over to the second one and then the third one. Over to you, HOD.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. So the first question was that we brief the committee on the rollout of the electronic filing system that will assist in improving its reliability of reported performance information. And Chairperson, you're absolutely correct. The department has manual systems in place, supported by electronic systems. And it's not only a departmental issue, nationally they're grappling with it, internationally they're grappling with it. So it's not a sole issue here, and we're learning lessons, and the team will give feedback on the progress that we have made. Mr. De Weber will handle this input, supported by Michelle.
Thank you, Chair. So what we've done is we've looked at the predetermined objective findings, and then we've looked at the interventions that we've provided progress in terms of how we're dealing with it and the interventions. And I'll hand over to Ms. Shand, who will basically talk to that.
Chair, just to confirm, the slide handout that we're working on, the heading says predetermined objectives.
So the two indicators that we had findings on were the measles dropout, first dose dropout rate, and the postnatal visit length extent. And for both of these, we put short and long-term interventions in place. For the measles first dose dropout rate, the interventions that we put in place today was firstly, we requested the National Department and the Department of the Premier if we could remove this indicator from our APP, as it wasn't adding value at that stage. We have retained in our operational monitoring, and we are now implementing, in the process of implementing integrated station units for the system and collecting the information in a standardized manner directly from the clinician's notes and then rolling out our PHCIS system to collect that data in an electronic manner, which will help us to monitor it in a standardized way, so that it's not relying on the clinician to actually tick a box on a piece of in a register. So that is our long-term plan for it. At the moment, it won't be audited because we've now removed it from our annual performance plan. The second slide speaks then directly to the integrated stationary and the primary healthcare information system that we are utilizing as our long-term plan to solve our data collection problem. And for integrated stationery, we've piloted this in a number of facilities, and we're busy implementing the stationery across the board. So the stationery is a very nice tool that now provides the clinician with the notes all in a standard format that they can complete and also record on the same piece of paper the service that was rendered, which can then be captured on the electronic system. And this helps then also facilitates with continuity of care through the longitudinal design. So it allows the clinician to see 4 encounters at once and the record of that. It promotes integration of care and also, as I've indicated, facilitates the electronic capturing of the clinical information directly from the folder without having a one step in between going into a register. So there are a couple of other advantages there that I've listed, but I think the main one is that it does away with paper registers and the requirement of the clinician to calculate the days and the weeks and the months. The system does all of that for them. The primary healthcare information system, we've developed and piloted the next phase of the system, which will capture the data from the integrated stationery. And there's a bit of further development that needs to be done, and then we will roll out that over the next couple of years. And once the data is captured, the system is then able to extract the information and calculate on behalf of the staff. In terms of the post-dental visits within 6 days, this one, the issue here is that the visits that took place, the mom actually came to the facility on the 7th or the 8th day, and the definition is quite particular in saying the visit needs to take place within 6 days. So the fact that the mom came on the 7th day, we had counted it as a visit, and the auditor said it was outside of the definition, so we shouldn't count it. So one of the interventions that we are trying to put in place here is to ask the National Department of Health to build in some flexibility into the definition to allow just some leeway in that 6-day cut-off, so that we won't, so that even if a mom comes on the 7th day, we can still count it. And we're actually going to be applying that to quite a few of our indicators that have age or time dimensions within them. Then some of the other short-term interventions that we are doing is just retraining staff on what the definitions are. We have an internal control unit which goes out and checks what's happening on the ground and that the data is collected properly. We've made the definitions available in an app that is with the assistance of the National Department of Health, and that's now available to clinicians on their cell phones, and they can check definitions at any point in time. And then the indicator is monitored operationally as we roll out the integrated stationery and PHI system. That should also improve the quality of the data. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Member Bironko?
To the first intervention and progress. Please understand, I don't work enough, and I don't understand the load and the pressure and whatever you guys are under. But just for me to read that, it leaves a lot of questions, Chair, through you.
how bad was it that you had to ask to have it removed as an APP target? Because you speak about a number of issues could not logically be interpreted like campaign, stockouts, changed immunization schedule and all of that. Now, this is, you're talking here about the measles dropout rate and you're reporting on it. Was that, I remember, Chair, we also spoke about mothers who come for, was it prenatal or after that mothers come to the clinic, and that was also a discrepancy in reporting. So how bad was this that you had to ask for it to be removed as an APP? I see NDOH has approved it, but can you give us an example of how it influenced the fact that there was discrepancies in recorded material and what really happened? So that I can just understand that.
Just one moment.
And you do say,
You still will continue.
That same one?
Yeah, same one, though.
You still say that the indicator is still monitored operationally, and as the rollout of the integrated stationary and PHS systems progress, electronic reporting using systems will be possible result in more accurate data. So you're still doing paper and electronic. Why? I thought that you would move to electronic so that paper gets out of the way. If I can just get that.
Member Tachaman's name, on the same point, Member Tachaman? Because I don't want to address that point and then we can move on. I don't want to jump now to a next point. Because I also have a question on that point. So we can, Member Tachaman and then Member Mastelori.
Chair, on the same issue, Chair, because it's I think it's easy to say we remove, but it does not remove the problem of actually making sure that children will be immunized while they're still young on the right period. And I'm not hearing the department saying that this is how they were able to deal with the problem. Because the problem that you are dealing with now here is the problem with the aging, not the problem, you know, in relation to the actual concern. Because the actual concern of the aging is derived from the fact that children are not getting immunized till over a particular period, which is quite a concern. And I'm not hearing you saying this is how you plan to deal with that effectively. I think that's the first one. And because I also do not want this to be just maybe the department is doing a tick box exercise. I don't think so. And how it appears now, it appears as if you are preparing a tick box situation. The second part, relating to that. In the instance that the department decide to do an integrated process, how long would it take to make sure that everything is streamlined in the process that we are able to do the balance check? If you hear me, call it.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to find out the how different is this reporting system of the TSIPV, the measles immunization, to any other, like the reporting system of whether being your TB or any other one. How different it is? Why is it specifically on this one was difficult for it to be adequately managed, or the records being inadequately reported? number one. And number two, if that's the case, how possible was it for the department to budget to know how many measles immunization do we need if the reporting system is a little bit complicated for the department to manage that? And I think that the third one, it will be maybe if we can have a explanation of the scenario of reporting from when you have to roll out the measles immunization. How do you go about and where does the reporting come in and how many times per week or a month or 6 months or quarterly? How do you go about so that we can have an understanding as a standing committee that where did the misinformation come in from the department side?
Thank you. Just again, I also want to listen to Member Chacham. It's easy to remove an EPP, but that was the Auditor General said there was a misstatement of the target achievement. So it's easy to just remove it from the EPP, and then we won't have that same finding. So that is a concern. And if you can just HD elaborate on that and just let us understand, like Member Beaver will say, we're not working in that field. So please let us just understand on that first question, then we'll come back to the answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the questions. And the honourable members would note that this particular indicator has got GTP, IPV, HPV, measles, first dose, dropout rate. Six data elements that make up one, and that is only the numerator, and then there's still a denominator. And what we found is that you need, so there's a measles process that generates measles numbers. There's a dropout process that records the dropout and the other. So these are several processes that come together to measure one indicator. What we, so just on the question of measles. So measles vaccination happens on a daily basis in all our clinics. The data get captured as it happens manually. That then gets translated electronically, and as the team has indicated, with the integrated station, you now have one sheet, and you don't have several registers for the various parts of the care program. And that then gets from the integrated stationery, that still has to be translated onto an electronic system, and that is a process. So just on the measles, I take the concern and I share the concern that the department should not be seeing that measles vaccination is a problem. So there are other indicators that measure specifically how we are doing on measles vaccination. There are three or four indicators that measure measles separate from this one. So this one is particularly those six elements in one indicator. We will then discuss with the National Department of Health. We are measuring measles separately. We are measuring IPV separately. We are measuring DTP separately. We fail to understand what decisions is national that couldn't also answer to us. What is it? It doesn't, and this is a prescribed indicator. It's not one of our developed indicators. And what we also found furthermore from a risk perspective is that we see 14 million primary healthcare clients. If you have one error on any one of these six elements, you are qualified, or there's a finding. And we then said, but if the indicator is not adding meaning, it's highly complex, so many things have to go right, it's six areas, one indicator, one data element wrong, you are regarded as incorrect. And that the National Department could not indicate to us what the benefit of the indicator is. Given the risk of the National Department very often, at very short notice, tell you to go.
Yeah, I understand that the issue is still concerning, but as part of answer, if the issue you can assist me, I'm trying to understand now, if the department is saying to me, both national and the them, they don't understand the inclusion of this particular, in my view, as a layman, thinking that this is an important issue. So why, for instance, why number one is there, and then because I'm trying to understand why both departments, national and province, won't have an understanding and why the inclusion of this particular aspect or element.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Chair, I'm a practical person. I'd like to understand a process as it happens. Please, ma'am, can you... I'm coming to you now with my baby or whoever you need to test. What do you do? Here, I'm handing you my baby now. You're going to do a test for me. What's in front of you? What do you need to state? What do you need to mark? Because you mentioned six things. I don't understand what they are. Yeah. Those are all things that you need to tick. Does the child have this or doesn't it have this? What is that? Those six things that you mentioned, what is it? And how does it relate to the final report? I just practically want to understand what you're trying to explain to me. Thank you.
Minister?
Okay, the reason I'm jumping in is because I can understand from us, because they can respond on the technical aspect, but just to explanation. This vaccine, which is the third one, is being offered at the, it's either we call it Pentaxin, yes. Pentaxin 3, which is this one, is being offered at 14 weeks. What does it mean? The first one is one that contains the diphtheria, tetanus, whooping cough, polio, and hemophilus influenza type B. One vaccine, it's all in one. And then we have hepatitis B also at 14 weeks, because this is number 3. There are others at 6, 10, 14, so it's at 14 weeks. And then we have got that one. And then now we have the measles, previously the measles first dose, actually it was the first dose at 9 months. They move it further for the measles first dose to be 6 months. Now, that we don't dispute that, there's no way, because it's part of what it's supposed to do to give the immunization is part of the pack. We do give. It's important. Now the question is, if now you remove as a PDO, how would we want to ensure that it's being provided? I think that's the question, because it sounds as if we might be presenting ourselves if it's not so important. Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Now what he's trying to explain is that for the IMS and also other PDOs within health, you need to have a denominator. So you must know how many of those children that are supposed to have or would have this. Let's make an example. If it was the first dose at birth, they will look in terms of if it's in old source, how many babies have been born there that they require to have their birth in the 6 weeks. But if I could make a further example around that, they might be born in Oldson, but they were referred from Canada. And therefore, we would have given all those babies, but won't be able to follow them. So that 6 weeks, then, it will be given in Canada. But it's not a big thing. But in this case, because of all of these three types of the vaccines, it means now it's a must that not only wait until the child comes, you have to have campaigns. Which is for the more pop companies, they might not necessarily be the denominator that you expected. There might be others who are coming to visit and all of those. There might be, for example, the measles, even first dose, was a time where there was a stock out, shortage. So although it might be we're expected to have so many, if there's a shortage, it means it will impact on the denominator. And then hence the argument was that for now that we are all grappling in terms of this as a PDO and becomes difficult, because if now we don't have the exact denominator, it will end up having something where if it's not done or it's not done very well. So we had to work it out, especially that the new first dose has been included. So that was the reason that it was put in, the recommendation was that let's not put it as an APP, part of the PDO, or though we're still going to have it, because it doesn't mean that there is no, because it's a must, because the measles step has to be reported every day or whatever, I don't know what is the time frame. So it's still going on, because it's part of our core function, But because of the not necessarily clarity around that, and also they keep on changing even the, we'll call them, the schedule of the immunization, that was the reason.
Thank you, Minister. I can understand the committee's questions. It's about whether we take measles vaccination and the other vaccines and the reporting thereof seriously. So all of these are being reported individually, but when you, as the minister, some of them have the different timelines of a child's journey in the first year when the immunizations happen. So when you put the info, data elements together for this, you have to look at various timelines of the child's age and various visits across the clinic to come together to say that that is the this particular indicator. And from a measles performance perspective, it doesn't add any value because you've got other indicators by which you measure your measles vaccination rate, and we've got it at various periods. There's another one. There is one on HPV, and so clearly the indicator as such with these complex set of data elements didn't tell us anything more or better than the other elements. And due to its complexity and not adding value, we then agreed, and all the other provinces agreed, it doesn't add value. Remove it from the APP because it doesn't add value. Why we are keeping it in the system is for us to start to challenge ourselves. How can we make the system work for this? And we know that the HIV program is starting to look at possibly this indicator might have value in that sense. So that is where we are. So I would like to give the committee the assurance that we do measure measles vaccination coverage is for us a critical. That's one of the performance measures that we report on in our annual report, that we keep managers accountable for, etc. But this particular indicator is only about that first dose dropout rate at a particular stage of the child's vaccine profile, and it didn't tell us anything more than what we wanted to know from the system.
I just want to find out, on the dropout, do you have because I know when I was in Cedarbeck, they always told us that they got the system of the home base that they will go and find out where their child, do you still use the same system to find out where they drop out?
Yes, I can confirm, Honourable Chair, that and this is the information system that we are reporting on, the primary healthcare information system that we are developing, give you by name and address where the child is that were born. So the manager of the facility know, and she can check also which child received what vaccination, and as soon as they've missed a vaccination, they will link up with our breast carers to go there. So that happens, and that happens in any case. It is just that this particular indicator didn't add any value because it just was not adding value for what we wish to achieve.
Member Bilal.
This indicator, as the AG found the discrepancy, was not about the fact that you are or you are not doing measles vaccinations. It was not about that. It was the fact that you could not accurately report on the dropout rate of who was supposed to be there and who came and who didn't come, in layman's terms. That's what it was about. Now that you've taken it out, how are you? What's the measure that you put in place to ensure that nobody falls through the cracks? You've given this explanation here, but you understand that. In layman's terms, tell me what it means that you do.
Just one moment. You got the same question, maybe, Sajan, on that?
Yeah, similar. Earlier on, I asked about the process in relation to the integration of the system. You talk about the integration, but though you are not putting this as part of the audit, the plan is that you integrate the systems in the process so that you are able to pick up even if one goes to this clinic and after some time goes to another clinic. So that process, how are you managing and how long is that process in terms of verification so that we know that it's the right information that comes in the...
So Chairperson, thank you. The question is how do we prevent the dropouts from happening? And how do we know whether a dropout has happened? As I've explained, is that we've got our information system at the moment give us the type of data by baby born, by family, and what that immunization schedule is. That's part of the development of the primary healthcare information system, so that we would know. At the management level, that is then reports drawn, and those are still reported in the ATP. The measles coverage are still reported in the ATP. It is just this particular indicator, because it's complex, that we've asked to remove. All the others are still being reported on the various aspects. So there is a system in place to make sure that we catch every baby, etc. Then apart, as the minister has explained, there's also, in addition, measles campaigns. And that is, the World Health Organization has indicated that every 3 years you must have a campaign to be able to make sure that you catch every child, because one measles vaccination, or even two or three, doesn't give you 100% coverage. You must still go back and give additional coverage to make sure you've got herd immunity in communities. In the data system, the campaigns are not recorded, because they are not by patient, they are by campaign. And that influences very often your data elements, because the nurses are now busy with campaigns, still doing the right thing, but it doesn't necessarily enter into the data system. And that's why the reference to campaigns was here. Then the honourable members asked about system integration, and it's largely are we in a position to capture patient movement, and I wonder, Mr. De Vega, whether you can perhaps respond to that.
So, honourable members, we have what is known as a unique patient identifier. So, every patient that is registered at our clinic or at our facilities, hospital or clinic, receives a unique patient identifier. No matter which facility they visit after that, if their unique identifier is presented on the system, they will pick up where they've been prior to the original visit. Over and above that, we use that in as what is known as the primary key in IT terms, but as a source code key to say that if I want to integrate several systems into one environment, which we have a data center project undergo, we can now get patient identifiable data in an integrated manner at that level, and we're already proving significant benefits from having such an integrated system. In IT terms, it's called a business intelligence system. So it basically just interoperates all the data elements against this primary key, which is a patient identifier. So we can, at a snapshot, see patients across the platform, and that's how we are basically integrating the information.
Chairperson, just to add to that, what Mr. De Vega has indicated is where we've got, we've got learning sites to do that. It has not yet been fully implemented across the whole province. And this is work in progress to make sure that we get there. But he is taking the leadership in making sure those developments are work. If the committee would like to go to Rosenville, that is where we've got the most advanced development phase of the system, to really go and see what's possible and how the facility manager can manage the population in the area that she or he serves.
I just want to find out, you are saying the system is already working now that you load the patient. What you're saying is operating now. Okay, so sorry, Chair, through you, what I'm trying to find out, if the system is working, you are already loading, how do you have the dropouts that you don't know if they did go and get those immunizations or not? Or is it the manual feeding to the system that is happening that you get it, you don't know if they are dropouts and where they are, or what can be the loophole? I'm trying to hear the loophole, where is the problem emanating from for the dropouts to happen? And I know the challenge of the mobiles and the everything that is happening there, but if I go and collect or I go and get my measles in Cedar Bay, in Citrasdal, and when I go, whatever immunization, and when I need to go again, I go in Khabun, and I fall as a dropout from the Citrasdal site, how do you know if that system is there? Isn't it that you have to know that no, you can see the patient access consulted in Khrabo, then you cannot say it's a dropout because that means on the specific date or around those days I did go to Khrabo and consulted. I'm trying to find out to the layman, help me.
Chair, Sasha, it's quite an interesting conversation. So the one aspect is how does we ensure that the child gets all the information and that the system knows.
Yeah.
The mother also has a rotary heart card.
Yeah.
So on the card, she carries with the baby all the time, which indicates which vaccines have been given, where, and the sign off it is. So that is there, the way the baby, all of those, that happens with the card on the mother. That's her card that she carries with her. On the electronic system, that is your question, and I wonder Ian would like to respond to that.
So as mentioned previously that earlier today that we haven't matured the system across the platform.
Okay.
So some facilities don't have the mechanism to capture yet, and therefore that's probably leading to the gap as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Same question.
Is indicating, I just want to understand what might be the period to have the system running, fully operational.
So there's a lot of dependencies for a system to be implemented. One of the dependencies is obviously broadband access or connectivity, electricity in the environment and so forth. So what we've done as the first tranche is to try and get electricity across the platform. Once we had electricity, we started to roll out broadband. With the broadband, we first focusing on all the national roads. And this is something that we do with our strategic partners in the Department of the Premier. They do the actual implementation of the broadband. And then there's something called the last mile. And that is now all those facilities close to the major roads will then be connected. Now, knowing that broadband is actually a 10-year project and we're only in the third year of that project, so until we have connectivity, we can't really implement, because the way we implement our solution is a central solution hosted in a central environment. For you to be able to pick up the patient's movement, you have to host it centrally within a central server environment. And there must be connectivity and electricity for you to be able to enable such a solution.
Thank you. Same one? And then we'll be with it. Put in the microphone.
No, Chair, just last one on the dropout. You are right, Doctor. Mothers do have this card. But you get some mothers who don't pay attention to that card. And you get mothers who are walking around with their babies not getting all their immunization. Does obviously that affects your dropout rate reporting, because that person registered at some stage, was supposed to come back, didn't come back. So your numbers won't synchronize. That'll be a problem. How do you correct that? Do you go look for this patient? So then you have a specific team that goes out to look for these people and bring them back.
To confirm, Chair, the nurse manager at the facility, she knows, she's got the information available of which are the children that should be immunized in that area and which ones of them, where they are on the schedule. If they miss an opportunity, if they miss an appointment or miss an opportunity for vaccination, we collaborate with home-based carers. They then go out and collect and bring them back. And then we work on the mother, because we see it as a symptom of either the mother is not understanding the situation or the importance of vaccination. But you're absolutely right. There are many reasons why the mother would not necessarily come back to the facility, and we try to support them to take the right decisions.
Also, children don't come or only when they're coming for immunizations, because they normally come for immunizations when they have got a due date. But generally, they will have a flu, they'll come even in between. We have what we call integrated management of childhood illnesses, IMCI, meaning every child that presents at a health facility, irrespective of whatever, you have to certainly check the immunization, whether it's up to date. So you never, even if it's coming for a headache, you must never release a child if the immunization is not up to date without giving injection. So it might, maybe the next date is about in 2 days. So what are the chances that that child will come in 2 days? So you must do so. It's part of the whole pack, every child.
Thank you. Now we're going to move over to that. We still have questions on that mother postnatal visit within 6 days. Now I fail to understand. There's the indicator, now we say, but you know, the indicator needs flexibility. We're not going to write to the national department and ask for flexibility. Just explain that. Because why do you put up an indicator in line with national I'm talking about? Why? Where is it? This indicator, and nobody can make the indicator because there's no flexibility. Just explain that. And do your other counterparts in the other provinces, what do they do, and do they reach that indicator? I would like to know that. Just wait, actually, maybe people want to add that. Members, you want to add to that? Can we first get the response? Okay, actually. Member Maseko?
Maybe if they can explain to us what is the importance of the 6 days visit, and continue to answer that before we can...
Okay, it's not only within the national guidelines, but it's part of the international best practices of the 666. So within that, why, like in our maternity obstetric unities, so no matter when they deliver, they can discharge you after 6 days. So there's a 6 days, there's actually 6 days, 6 weeks. So that is the whole pack. Now, with the issue of the coming within the 6 days, it's part of, not only for the child to look at the child, the postnatal pack, but also in terms of the mother, if they're still feeling very well, is there any other thing? So it's part of that. Now, the issue now related to the indicator, this still happens, they still come, but they might not come on the 6 days. They might come on the 7th day. They might come on the 5th day. They might come on the 8th day. So how relevant that if now they come on the 7th or 8th day, for example, it's still the same thing. It's the same thing. Pregnancy, we say it's 9 months.
Yes.
So if you deliver at 8 months, it's still the baby. If you deliver at 10 months, it's still the baby. So I'm going to penalize us if now we deliver you at 10 months instead of 9 months. So same applies here. So the issue of the indicator is that others... exactly. So what happens is that now, what the AG was saying is that you are saying these people are coming in 6 days. You are wrong. We will pick up you that actually some come on the 7th, on the 8th day, and as a result, even the threshold is above 10%, we are penalizing you. And that's why we said, duh, even if they come at 7 or 8 days, still fine. So that's why we say that's all for the indicator. Let's do the job. So you understand that? It's the same thing across, by the way. You can understand in some of the provinces where whilst as we have been unqualified orders for the past 12 years or so, it just reflects that health problem will never have a clean overall audit. Now, how much more in those provinces where they are grappling with the finances and yet again being penalized for such? So for us, we are step ahead in the sense that we pick up these. And then when we now share within the National Health Council, within that committee, that's where they say that, oh yeah, you are right, and then the other 10% case also is going to remove. So that's where we are.
Member Joseph first, and then Member Chacham, then Member Seiko. Member Joseph?
No, thank you, Chair. I always wondered why they call us the Mother City. But I think the question, the point here, I think to be debated was the according to the AG, that misstatement of the percentage. So I just would like to know, almost similar to the previous discussion, how you're going to manage that to bring a more accurate percentage into your next annual report. So that's not another matter. That's what I wanted to know in terms of how you can practically do that.
Member Sasha?
Chair, what I'm hearing is saying that they've taken it out. That is it out or still in?
It is.
So, but it does not. Were you saying that you don't count now in terms of the days? But we, because where I'm coming, everything.
They're asking for flexibility. So if it's day 7 or day 8 or day 5, it's still the target. It's not the day that they have a problem because the people still come. Even so, they're asking the National Department for some flexibility on not day 6, but.
Yeah, that's why they are saying that.
Instead of saying 50%, we should stick to 51%. But what is his point is that even the 50 or 60 is still not acceptable. How are we going to make sure, even you go further, irrespective whether it's a 7th day or 8th day? I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My question is
yes, Mr.
My question particularly is that what is the impact? What are we trying to achieve in that 6 days? Or less or over, which necessitated them to actually make a finding on it. Unless I would understand if I'm told that even if you come over 1 month, it makes no difference. So this is what I'm trying as a layman to understand about this issue and why the fast that the AG would have over this issue.
Member Masiko first.
Thank you, Chair. I think if the minister sort of answered me a bit, but what I want to find out is from the AG, as you put the APs, do you interpret this to them or they come with their interpretation because you specialize in health, they specialize in something else? When they come and they see the APP, then they don't listen to what you are saying to them, what's the interpretation of that APP, that now it becomes a yo-yo system of this time. They will pick up 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you'll have to explain and they'll refuse and you'll have to remove or you'll have to change it. How is it going to happen that, how is it happening now that it has been, as I tend to think that this indicator has been there before? In the annual report, why now is it changing or why now the interpretation it is a problem? That's number one. Number two that I want to find out is the 60%, like Member Joseph has indicated. What is, I tend to think as a mom, that after you give birth, the most important thing is to check if everything is okay with the child. So, what is the problem that it goes to 60%? I mean, 80% it will be Now to 60% something is not okay. Is it the issue of the movement of the, is it in the rural areas as the seasonal workers, they move around, are they impacting on the impact of that also comes to this? Or there is another factor that maybe the standing committee can hear if there is something that is contributing to the percentage.
Member Bivanko?
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to understand, where does the 666 come from? Is it legislation? Is it just a practice?
Is it just a best practice?
Okay. So now, because it's a best practice, you implemented it in your targets. And you've said within 6 hours you can do this, within 6 days you must do that, within 6 months you must do that, and you put that as a target. However, I understand why there can be a discrepancy. Let's say your target under 6 days was 100 babies, but only 50 babies came. You had as a target 100, so 50, obviously you can have 50 there, then you haven't met your target. But the other 50 came on the 7th, or they came on the 8th, or they came on the 9th. So in actual fact, you did meet your target, you just met it later. Now, what's the cutoff for that?
Okay, put your microphone.
No, for that target.
Yeah,
because
I don't want to add to that quickly. I don't want to add to that because that is what I'm asking. You are asking for flexibility.
Now, what are you asking? Are you asking, you understand what I'm saying? Because if what you're asking, then you'll be able to meet your target if they make that 6 days flexible, right? So it's a cut-off, say make it 6 to 8 days, and then is that what you, what are you asking? And then the other question is just, the other question is that what I have, the 6 days, is there, somebody comes, is there a health issue if the, when does a health issue kick in? You know, if it's 9 days or 8 days, is there any effects if it's an extended period or longer? Just help us with that also, because then we will understand the importance of the 6 days. Thank you. Minister?
I'll give it to the HOD now. Firstly, those were asking the health relevance, the benefits or whatever, if they don't come within 6 days. Those have to move also with the flu. There's an ideal situation where every mom must be seen after 6 days post-delivery. But now you must understand that now things have changed, but it depends on the place of delivery. What are the chances, because if you also must look at terms, where are they delivering? What are the chances of a person where, if you say, let's say in Grabo, where there's an MOU, maternity unit, in terms of the delivery, but the person is coming all the way from Felistop. So what are the chances now you deliver there and then you go to Felistop? If you remember, you have to bring your baby with, and then it's June, it's raining in Cape Town. So what are the chances to bring the baby within that 6 days? And for what? Like, how would you recommend? Because it's unlike when you say, because your ARV treatment, because what, because the most ones that they normally come for, because it's a 6 week immunization, it's 6 weeks, the last one. So they will come because they will do the injection. For the 6 days, there's nothing, unless probably you say there was no BCG on discharge, bring your baby to have your thingy. So in terms of the practicality, it's one of those things where it's unlikely, where I'm sitting as a former midwife, that you'll get even 80%. In the metro, also there are also cultural connotations. Because you deliver in a Michael M. Mapongwana and then probably go back, whatever. Where I'm sitting, the baby mustn't be seen. Those have to take a taxi or you walk. They mustn't be seen. You need a 1 month, generally. Although it's not just whatever, but 1 month, it's because you'll be given, with all these people, with all their, not gems, but casts in the taxi. And then they get all of those. So that's why we have all these things. So what are the chances? There are very few. Plus also, because now we've got community health workers, part of their package is maternal and child health. So they will visit the households anyway, but what they don't is not necessary to fill in the things that a midwife is supposed to do, but to say, is your baby breastfeeding? Let me see, let me clean your whatever, your umbilicals and whatever, all of those. So are already doing that. So the chances of doing that will never be able to. But now the question is, so why are we having this if it's impossible? It's what HOG indicated, that you will always go to the national board. It's not ours. You go to them and say, this is impractical. Where now we have to write many letters with a DG and all of those stuff. So they said, oh, okay, we hear you. It's fine, you can adjust. But there are those indicators where we say, whatever they are saying, it cannot be. But there are others, they are linked also to the funding and whatever, where you have to stomach the whole kind of a pain. I think I'm quiet now.
Minister, you did very well. I think you've covered most of the issues. I think what's important...
Do you have something on that, the Minister?
Just one thing.
Put your mic to the...
Just one thing, sir. Just want to understand. Just want to understand the Minister as a senior midwife. But when I'm speaking to the students in UWC, I must tell them that the senior midwife have changed the syllabus. On the basis of practicalities, because it's about practicalities that we are raising, which I think most of us wanted to understand this particular issue, in fact.
Actually,
thank you. I think, Chair, the critical question that the honourable members have asked is, how important is the 6 days? What's the benefit of the 6 days, or what's the risk if we don't make the 6 days? And what exactly did the AG find? So I think the ministers covered the importance of the 6 days. This is really, so if you've got your third or your fourth child ready to go back after 6 days, that you check whether your breastfeeding is okay, you might not go. So clearly the best practice of within 6 days, just to see, and it's very often your first time mothers that struggle with a baby, or they've got depression, or they've lived in an abusive environment, or her own nutrition, or whatever the case might be. So there's a particular group that we definitely would like to target. But as the minister said, we will never achieve the 100% or even 80%. But we try to push this far as possible to bring the habit of a mother so that we care about you, we look after you. Within 6 days, bring the baby one to check. Now the intention was to, within that period of the 6 days, we would like to have that engagement. The fact that the Auditor General looked to a public health issue with the audit eye is part of the challenge, because we're still comfortable with 10 days from a public health perspective, but from an audit perspective, if you said 6 days, it must be 6 days, and you can't mislead, the public can't make a misstatement, and this is what they found, is that they said it is this, but it's actually not that, and we look at it from a public health perspective, and that is where the challenge lies. The other aspect is the importance of getting mothers to come back within 6 days. What we're doing, as the ministers indicated, we've now got home-based carers who, as part of their role of the play, they also visit the mother after 6 days. But they don't record in the system, and it doesn't go into an electronic data collection system. So our coverage is much better, but we're not recording that as yet. We're working on a data collection system in that space as yet to be able to record various elements, including this one. So we do believe that our coverage is much more than 60%. 60% is about 7 days, more or less. And then the issue is that the question was, what is the cutoff of the target? Okay, that's a public health expert question that we have to ask. And I'm not sure that the team can just indicate whether we have already asked for the type of flexibility, and whether we're going to put a cut-off date, or we just say, has the public health intention been achieved? Now, clearly for the Auditor General to audit something to say the public health intention has been achieved, how will he audit that? They want numbers, and they want denominators and numerators. And health is, I think, the single only department with numerators and denominators, and both of them have to be correct. So, and I think all of that adds to the reality of this aspect.
The irony of what the doctor and the MEC has just reported now, Chair, we're always saying that clean audits mean nothing when it's just a tick box and you're not delivering a service, because that's more important. In this case, they couldn't tick the box, but they delivered the service. So that's the irony in this reporting system that we are questioning here now.
Okay, Member Joseph?
Thank you, Chairperson. The fact is that there's another 6. What is the problem of making the 6 days the minimum up to the next 6? And then you have all that time that people could come and deal with it. So it's still a measurement time between the 6 and the next 6. Which is a lot of flexibility in that. That's what I think might be the solution.
Is it there?
Honourable Chair, we will take that as a possible consideration when we have a public health discussion. And clearly, our pediatric experts and our maternal obstetricians are the two expert family specialists that we engage with on what is, from a public health perspective and from a child health and a maternal health perspective, the best way. If we were in the ideal world, it would have been great to say that you've done a risk profiling of a mother and a baby. And those that you've risk profiled, they have to be there within 6 days. Not negotiable, they have to be there. But if your third or your fourth or your fifth child, really, I'm not going to worry about you. But that is the very, very ideal world. We're not there yet. But clearly, the issue of flexibility is not something that the AG feel comfortable in, because it's difficult to interpret that. But we would love to test that and see what works, because this is a public health issue audited from an audit out. And I think they're incompatible in this case.
Member Biola?
Just as a final number for me to understand this, you're saying the definition of the indicator does not allow for flexibility. What's the definition? I understand your explanation of why you need flexibility, and I would agree if I think practically of the impediment that parents face. So you're saying the definition of the indicator does not allow for this.
Yeah. What's the definition says within 6 days of delivery, you have to report back at a health facility to be seen. That is the definition.
Finish. So just in closing, before we move on to the next, what is the submission to National Department to say, how do we make that day, how do we make that 6 days flexible in order for you to achieve your goal?
Leslie, could you perhaps share us, Kelsey?
Yeah, so the indicator set that National sets for us is revised every 2 years. We now currently just started the second year, so we can't change it right now. But the review of that is starting in June, and we will present our public health perspective on what the flexibility should be from a scientific perspective rather than that.
So you'll have the same finding?
You have the same finding.
Potentially. Yeah. I think we help the staff to count better. So if it doesn't add up to six, don't record it for this purpose. Please record it from a public health perspective, but for the indicator, don't record. But you know that doesn't add value.
Thank you. I think we can move on to the next topic. I think a big discussion of the upgrading and the user asset management plan when it comes to health and infrastructure. So who's going to do that for the business?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Dr. Laura Angeliti Toy is our Chief Director for Facilities and Infrastructure Management, and she's supported by Nomna Efron Liu from as our colleague. Thank you.
In the past, when we had the SCOPA discussion, we discussed in some way infrastructure planning, especially in relation to expenditure, maintenance, and so on. So I think it's a very good opportunity for us today to come and present in a more exhaustive, comprehensive manner the complexity of infrastructure planning and the current aspect that health is responsible for. I just want to put in the context, and then Manet will be able to, as a director of infrastructure planning, will go through the presentation. The UM, that is the user asset management plan, is a deliverable that has been put in place since 2008 when YAMA was promulgated. So it's part of the YAMA deliverable, and is for any user that is using provincial property present to the custodian. In our case, before the UN, we had what we call the infrastructure plan. That was a plan that we had to submit to the National Department of Health in order to make them aware of our infrastructure situation as well as planning. Now the two have been combined since 2008-09, and now the UN is also submitted to National Health and National Treasury. And in the last few years, this document that is a 10-year plan is used for assessing what health called or National Treasury called the performance-based incentive grant. As you know, we have a baseline grant that is a national grant, but every year we have to submit documentation in order to be assessed by committee, treasury, and in national health to see if we are eligible for additional funding. And one of the deliverables is the UAMP. The UAMP is checked from the quality point of view, from the comprehension point of view, and actually if the infrastructure plan is aligned with the department objective and service plan. So I just want to mention that in the last 3-4 years, we have been scored at 5, that is best practice in the country. So we are actually very proud to have achieved the quality of the UN after all our effort since 2010. So the presentation will go to show you the in a more detailed manner the issue related to the aging of our infrastructure from one side, that is a departmental risk, but on the other side we'll show you also what is our planning for the next 10 years. The document that we discuss today is the 1819 document. We haven't started, or we are about to start the 1920 document, but the 1819 is about to be printed. So as last year, if I remember correctly, we gave you a copy, a printed copy. We will provide you a printed copy of the document as soon as it's published. And from my side, I think I gave you the overall view, and then I'll ask Manet to go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to start on slide 3. Which indicates the reason why we're doing the user asset management plan. And as Laura said, the first bullet is in terms of GEAMA. And the primary strategic planning document utilized by health to ensure optimal delivery of provincial health infrastructure facilities in the Western Cape. And more specifically, the purpose is to identify present and prioritize health infrastructure needs in support of the implementation of the strategic plan, Healthcare 2030, and the acute hospital bed plan. Ensure that the greatest health service needs in the province are addressed as the highest priorities, while ensuring that optimum cost efficiency and affordability is achieved. And then provide an indication of anticipated expenditure per program, sub-program and per project over the life cycle of the facility. Communicate the intention of the of health as far as its infrastructure, capital maintenance needs, delivery and management programs are concerned to both external and internal stakeholders. Outline the budgetary requirement of meeting the health mandate with respect to infrastructure management and demonstrate responsible management. Slide number 4. And the UN provides a summary list of all the identified infrastructure needs of the department, including capital, maintenance and repair requirements to enable effective and efficient service delivery. And in addition, it outlines the office accommodation requirements to ensure the necessary administration of the service. The office accommodation requirements is given to Public Works. They are responsible for office accommodation and the maintenance and the erection of office accommodation. The UN do not include health technology needs as such. And the assessed annually by National Treasury, and Laura alluded to that. Then slide 5, the priorities. Strengthen and improve the primary healthcare infrastructure and health technology in all districts with specific focus in metro integration. Modernize emergency centers at hospitals. Provide or upgrade acute psychiatric units at hospitals, focus on maintenance and fire compliance at existing health facilities, and improve water and energy efficiency. This has come to the forefront the last 2 years. And then develop health technology policy and related assessment framework incorporating performance measures such as access, coverage, equity, efficiency and cost effectiveness, including standard equipment list for facility type. These priorities include health technology, and as I explained, health technology is not actually part of the UN. The next slide, number 6, gives you an indication of the facilities that we have. And if I take the primary healthcare facilities, we've got 55 in the metro and 198 in the rural. The reason why we've got less in the metro, I would imagine, is that the city is also fulfilling a function. Primary healthcare function in the metro. And then the slide goes on to explain all the facilities and the ratio between metro and rural. And if we look at slide number 7,
That is the current status of where we're finding our conditions of our health facility. 5 being excellent, and then C1 being very poor. Normally what we do with this analysis is when it's very poor, then we can no longer utilize that facility for health purposes, and we've got to do something drastically about those facilities. The next slide, slide 8, gives you the estimated maintenance backlog. This indicates that we require, and I take the 2018-19 example, we require 1.6 billion more or less per year for maintenance backlog. And our actual allocation for maintenance is not even 600 million. So that leaves us with a backlog of 1 billion rand per year. The next slide concentrates on the infrastructure backlog. That's there. The infrastructure backlog, how we determine that is we've identified all the facilities that we require for 2030 and beyond. And then we put a rand value to that, and then the outcome is that our infrastructure backlog is 27 billion rand. Then our maintenance definition, I'm not going to go through each definition, it is there for reference document. Slide number 11 indicates the priority categories that we've got to attend to. So in terms of maintenance, we've got to first of all look at the first three categories. We've got to make sure that our buildings are safe in terms of occupational health safety regulations. And of course we've got to attend to dangerous situations and health hazards. The reason why we've got to categorize that is because of the backlog that we have. Then slide number 12, the strategy for maintenance and prioritization criteria. The maintenance is a confirmed priority for 2018. And we'd like to strengthen the engineering capacity and day-to-day and routine preventive maintenance to all newly built facilities. This initiative started also about 7 years ago. That specific allocation of funding was given to facilities that were completed from then on, and then there was a set aside for those facilities to do preventative maintenance at that facility, and it's working very well. Then the hub and spoke implementation for day-to-day and routine maintenance, building and clinical engineering. We have been working towards that, and it's not yet fully implemented, but that's the plan. Prioritization of maintenance at existing facilities is based on the following criteria. Tertiary hospitals, Tiger Brook, Prince Kid and Red Cross hospitals, and primary healthcare facilities. Then we're looking at a water security program as well, and then working towards ensuring fire compliance. The next slide deals with a long-term plan for facility type. We've analyzed where all the clinics are within the Western Cape, and then we've identified what must be done to each one of those facilities, whether they must be relinquished, whether they must be replaced, whether new ones are required, and whether they've got to be done major renovations to the facilities, and upgrade and additions. And then we come to the conclusion of how many facilities we're going to need for 2030. That is the ideal situation that we are working towards. The next slide indicates the summary of how many of them must be relinquished and replaced, upgrade and additions, maintained, and R. Then I'm looking at slide number 15, primary challenges in the planning, delivery and maintenance of infrastructure. The infrastructure budget allocation has continuously been reducing over the past few years, which necessitates the ongoing reprioritization of projects. I must explain the decrease is back in real terms. And due to budgetary cuts, certain projects will be deferred to the outer years. However, planning will continue to ensure a pipeline of projects as the fiscal climate might improve in 5 years' time. The impact of the reduced budget on the infrastructure delivery is as follows. The expenditure and number of projects which can be undertaken in the IMTEF will be reduced. Existing infrastructure which requires replacement and for which strategic brief should be issued in the IMTEF will only be prioritized in outer years. The maintenance backlog, which is currently in excess of 1 billion, will increase. And in the slow delivery of healthcare facilities to meet current demand with increased backlog for 2030 planning requirements. Delay for the Metro Hospital replacement program. We've got to replace Helderberg Hospital. We've got to build a new Klipfontein Hospital. We've got to replace Tigerberg Regional Hospital. As well as Victoria Hospital, which is not indicated here. But the high priority is Helderberg, Klipfontein and Tigerberg in the metro. And in the rural, it is the Swartland Hospital, which needs to be replaced due to the fire. The delay of the Tigerberg Central Hospital replacement project, that is the PPP project, has placed a huge onus on us to maintain Tigerberg Hospital in more depth. Aging medical equipment with insufficient funding for replacement and increasing the risk of future service disruption of related interventions and services shutdown at Tigerberg Hospital, a particular concern. Capacity constraints from our implementing agent, which is Public Works, leading to under expenditure of the infrastructure budget. With all that, we've got to place mitigation strategies in place, and slide number 16 is dealing with that. So increased focus on maintenance of existing infrastructure, increased preventative maintenance budget allocation to ensure that new facilities are being maintained, implementation of the hub and spoke maintenance model for HD and infrastructure, and we are supposed to reduce the expenditure on capital projects, which is a bit of a difficult statement. And then we've got to improve on the briefing documents and scope of work for maintenance projects to assist Public Works in the role as implementing agent. Public Works has introduced TASC as capacity support for Public Works, and we're investigating our cost and time-saving initiatives, and we are continued partnership with donor organizations as well as with National Health, who got their own funding allocation. Further mitigation strategies, alternative construction methods for healthcare facilities, integrated asset management and management system, service pressures are being attended with relocatable container type structures, standardization and repeat design, and utilization of framework contracts to improve speed of delivery, framework contracts being contracts that spans over a 3-year period so that we don't have to go out of tender every year. And then innovative local health technology solutions link economic development and use of health technology assessment and other decision support tools. The next item, impact of budget reductions, and again mitigation strategies, avoid the situation where life cycle management will be compromised because of budget cuts and short-term solutions to maintenance. Investigation of insufficient use of space and relinquishing of unused space sites. Reduction of vandalism and negligence by improving the security of the facilities. And the implementation of integrated facility management to take increasing ownership at appropriate levels. The next slide is dealing with the budget. In 16-17, 101% of the budget was spent because of strategies that was put in place, alternative strategies where we've seen slow expenditure on the one hand, then we've increased expenditure on the other hand. In 17-18 we were less successful with that strategy, but we also tried that. And we had a 94% expenditure of the budget in 17-18. The third column is just the indication of what has been spent against which program. Then for 18-19, the budget allocated for 18-19 indicates that for capital there's 36% budget allocated, and maintenance 43%, and health technology 20%, with transfers being 2%. The budget indicated there in for 18-19, the 887 million includes, if I'm not mistaken, 109 million which we received for the large incentive grant that we received, 109 million. Then in conclusion, slide 22, we rationalize number of strategic briefs to be issued based on budgetary cuts. We've got to, we can't feed our implementing agent with briefing documents and we don't have sufficient funding. So for the next year we will reduce the number of briefing documents to our implementing agent. We will focus on maintenance of all physical assets. Tigerberg Hospital maintenance and remedial works will receive will continue to receive attention. And we are still working on a standardized and repeat design for primary healthcare and for ambulance patients. We are looking at lean design, sustainable and affordable infrastructure, and develop tools for analyzing value for money in infrastructure delivery, the optimal use of available infrastructure, and assessment of operational budgets when determining feasibility of projects. We cannot build new facilities if we don't have an operational budget in other words, if we don't have staffing budget, we can't build the facility, and it's also a new condition of the grant that we cannot do that. And the last slide, the delivery. To collectively improve program and project management, time, cost, quality and risk management, that's an ongoing ongoing effort from our side and from Public Works to look at those delivery items. Innovation and infrastructure delivery, and as I mentioned before, the hub and spoke maintenance model, and support systems that we require to improve the quality of information and technological platforms for sharing information, establishing a provincial asset maintenance and management system for health technology.
Thank you, members. This is, I think, Dr. has a lot of questions. I don't think we're going to get to all the questions, but I'll give Member Bevergal first opportunity to ask. Member Bevergal.
I'm going to breathe very deeply before I speak, Mr. Chair. This is the thing about presentations that I'm always talking about. This document was given to us. Doctor, as the head of the department, I'm going to speak to you now. This document was given to us. Because it was given to us, I read it. And I know what's in here. So I do not appreciate to come and sit here and have the same document that I read back to me. We expect that when you do presentations like you did, you put the presentation down and you speak to it. It's just not right that you read every line to me. I don't understand anything more than what's written on this page. I have a lot of questions about a lot of things that I would have expected. Because the bullet is there, you would speak to it and explain it. I don't know anything now. So I don't know, Chair, whether I must put the questions that I have on paper and ask them to submit the answers, but really, I really want to appeal, and maybe in defense of this lady, it's the first time she's doing a presentation to us. She probably doesn't know that that's what we expect, that when you do a presentation, you speak to it and not read it. But I have a lot that I'd like to know, especially about practicalities of
This is a very important department, Chairperson. It's very important that that maintenance happens and, you know, the facilities are right. And at least we have the freedom to pick up the phone and phone the HOD, phone the MEC when we see a problem. But when we come to this kind of thing, we also want to stand between the department and the community when they complain to us. We must be able to have that answer and say, yes, this is your complaint, but this is possibly the answer. Or pick up the phone and say, this is the complaint, what do I say to the person? From this, I can't deduce anything, Doctor. I'm sure you understand where I'm coming from. Thank you.
Remember, we will stop people previously reading documents before, so our forces will stop the person there. But
I think
the opportunity now. I just think either we go into the question line or we put it on paper that we don't understand. You know, because when you have a document like this, like Member Bivanga says, that's why we get the documents to read it. But I think, members, I feel if I must not engage, it's going to be too lengthy, and I don't think it's going to be too time-consuming. But Member Chacham, you want to, and Member Joseph, you just want to make a comment, and then we will sit down, because we're going to have a discussion after this coordinator, and then we will put down the questions, because it's worrying looking at this document, because there's no budget. You know, and you're running on a deficit every year, and it's very concerning. So you wanted to know, you know, I see the mitigation and all of that, but I don't know if it's sufficient, you know. I don't know. You're looking at different infrastructure and all of those type of things. Maybe that is the things that we want to know, Member Beaver, because if you look at alternatives, what is the alternatives and how is it going to save you costs at the end of the day? You know, those type of questions. Member Chacham and then Member Joseph.
Chair, maybe I must say that maybe some of the questions must be done through written, because we have received this information now, which was not there before. So I think you are right that we must further take those questions in writing. And maybe some would have to do some interpolation and get the
minutes. Question here.
So,
okay.
Because, I mean, there are issues, possibly, for instance, on slide 12, where you talk about currently critical in terms of categories that you are putting there. I mean, the issue of health, of, for instance, the dangerous situation, the situation of health hazard. I mean, we still have people who still go and queue in facilities as early as 4. To me, that is quite dangerous. I mean, you still have, I'm not sure if it's under you, that one facility, Nyanga facility, clinic there is under you, where, I mean, it's really a health hazard, so dirty. And I mean, people who are supposed to go and get either TB or HIV, their place where they are place I would hope one day the MEC must go there if it's under the problem, because it's not good at all. You know, though one would not say close it, because it's the service is needed. You see, by the fact that we have a lot of people, then many people are unable to be serviced, because sometimes we don't have doctors there. The one doctor that was there had to be taken out. The minister remembered that one. So one that messed up there. So I think those are some of the issues. Maybe I must say that I will forward my question, because in for instance, I see the you are talking also on slide 15 about the delays for the metro hospital replacement, you know, and you mentioned some. And where I'm sitting, I'm still asking the MC, hey, what are you saying about justice? You know, so I'm saying those are the issues that